So speaking about mothers, we have the world's first mother in this week's Parsha. And of course, I think this should be very obvious. Everything that that goes wrong subsequently... Everything that goes wrong afterwards, I think that's the correct approach in terms of exegesis, is to blame the mother for everything. So let's just take a look. See, part of it's a little unfair, and I'll explain to you what it is that we want to do. I do want to look at this section today dealing with Cain and Hevel. And part of the problem with dealing with it is that we know how it turns out. Because we know how it turns out, so then we're going to do certain things in our minds. That just for example, we're going to then tend to say that the Cain was the bad one and Hevel was the good one. And there's good reason to say that, especially when we read the text, because it would seem to be that God thought that was the case. But we don't know why that is. We don't know why it is that God accepts, maybe even cherishes, the gift which is brought forward by Hevel, and why Cain is rebuffed and he's pushed aside and so on. And we do know the aftermath of it, and the aftermath is not very pretty. The aftermath is one of our first case of murder, which is probably not the more important issue. The more important issue is that it's the first example of what's going to then later be revealed as the major theme of Sefer Bereishit, and that is the quarrel between brothers and the older brother failing and the younger brother being successful. My older brother didn't agree with me that that's the theme of Bereishit, but that is in fact the case. And so as far as a thematic approach to it, so that also sets something, and I'm going to say is therefore almost in a certain sense the murder or the killing, because the word murder is not used here, the murder or the killing of Hevel is one which is more of a technicality, that, you know, that's really a bad thing that it happened at this point, but as I said, it's actually the failing of the older and the success of the younger, although it's a very short-lived success, is what interests us. And then, of course, we want to know, so why was this? You know, where did this come from? And maybe that's a very unfair question. So, you know, if we were going to then go back and ask ourselves, well, you know, we by the way, we don't know if Cain and Hevel were twins. Just for example, we don't know if we'll look at the text in a moment. We don't know if the Torah was describing one pregnancy or two pregnancies. It's written in a language which couches the reality. On the other hand, later on, we have a situation where twins are born, where we have a Yaakov and an Esav, or Esav and a Yaakov, coming out of the same parents, the same exact situation, and one, at least from the Jewish perspective, becomes the representation of all things which are bad, and the other becomes the representation of all things which are good, and becomes almost this epic battle between what will later on be Esav, Amalek, all demonic forces, versus Yaakov, Yisrael, and so on, which we would like to believe is the good side. And because we tend to read biblical narratives in comic book style, so therefore we always have the good and the bad, the hero and the anti-hero. And by the way, that may itself be not the correct way of reading things, and maybe we should not use our comic book experience to dictate how to read Tanakh, but apparently it's the way that Chazal read it. Chazal very much go in those two, almost a binary approach, good and bad, and so on, and maybe good and bad, maybe there's a very good reason why they did that, but let's begin, and let's start to blame the mother for everything. Excuse me?
You want to go home tonight.
You have to go somewhere.
First of all, we're going away for Shabbos. So if she threatens that she's not cooking and that's it and so on, it's fine. Bereishit Perek Daled. Now, some of us know that in order to get to Perek Daled, there was actually a Perek Aleph, Bet, and Gimel. And some of us also know that in Perek Gimel, things did not work out all that well, which is a little sad. You know, Perek Aleph was one which presented one great hope. Everything is brand new. I mean, I don't know how you imagine the Garden of Eden, but the Garden of Eden was someplace between getting that package and you taking all the plastic off of everything. That's what Adam and Eve were doing in the Garden of Eden, ripping the plastic. Oh, everything is brand new. Probably said Amazon on half of the packages over there. On the other hand, it may have had that new car smell. still, you know, the whole time, which is obviously the most, it's one of the most pleasing smells that exists. So everything is brand new. There's so much hope. There's so much, and here's that terrible word which our teachers always told us about our children. Which word?
Potential.
There's, which means your kid's a loser. But anyway, there's so much potential in Perek Aleph and Perek Bet that we're sort of just hoping for everything to be working out, but it doesn't work that way. And here is another observation. This observation is, I'll tell you afterwards if anybody's interested, but I'm co-authoring a book with somebody, and I have to look at things for a particular perspective, which I'm not revealing right now. And everything's secretive. I just got their attention, you notice that, right? And one thing which is interesting about our perspective of Gan Eden, and I say our, I say reading the Chumash about Gan Eden versus, let's say, some other religions which we're not going to mention by name right now. So you'll have the suicide murderers, right, terrorists, who will go and kill themselves and others for the hope of having this place in the Garden of Eden or paradise, whatever they're going to call it. And their understanding of paradise is one of total, I don't know what to call it,
hedonism.
I was going to say debauchery, so that's even better than hedonism. But it's such a disappointing prize at the end compared to what one would expect a spiritual life is supposed to lead towards. And Rav Amital mentioned once, and I wrote a book review of his book on the High Holidays, or Shani Yom Kippur, and one of the criticisms that I had on the book was they never told us which year some of the talks were from. So one of the things that he says is that, and he's contrasting the binding of Isaac, Akedat Yitzchak, with suicide terrorists, and he says that he went searching in all of Jewish literature, liturgy, sources, as much as he could find. Did anybody ever dial Kiddush Hashem because they wanted a share in the world to come? No, it was the Kadeshem Shemayim over here. It's they had their backs against the wall and let me do something in order to try to be, again, be Mekadeshem Shemayim, but it was never because I want the prize at the end. He said there was not one example of this in any place. He said he went searching for it. So again, I would love to know the background that caused him to go thinking in that direction. So, but what's interesting about this, and obviously there's some stages to this, but in our mind, the Garden of Eden, right, Gan Eden, somehow along the way becomes paradise. So we talk about souls in the Garden of Eden. So it actually creates this very interesting challenge for us. When we go back and try to read about the Garden of Eden, which, of course, on a certain level, is this place that Adam and Eve were put, where is it geographically? I mean, that's not revealed to us. But you know what is interesting about it? Rules are given. There are laws. You need to obey these laws. You don't have a paradise in the sense of every single previously forbidden pleasure, you know, hedonism, as you said, is now suddenly allowed. No, quite the opposite. There are rules over here. If you obey these rules, you'll be able to stay. If you don't obey these rules, and here is our famous Sforno observation, if you don't obey these rules, you will end up getting more rules. And he constantly does this throughout the Chumash. Every time you don't obey rules, okay, what do we need now? We need more rules. Again, you would think the opposite's the case. When people can't obey rules, okay, they can't obey rules. That's parenting today. Okay? God does not prescribe to modern-day parenting that they can't follow the rules, let's take away the rules. No, they can't follow the rules, guess what we need? We need more rules. We need more rules. They need more discipline. Again, spare the... Okay. we need to be able to respond. So I'm saying, so that's what we just now missed. So we have chapter one, you know, everything is put up, the builders, the movers, they go and they set everything up over here. Everything is good, by the way. You notice that? Everything is good? Kitov, 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 Kitov. Chapter 1, what's the main thing about chapter 1? Everything is good. So you know, ask God, how's chapter 1 going on? What does he say? God says it's all good. Right? That's the response. Chapter 1 is all good. What about chapter 2? Chapter 2 is when we start getting the rules. Man put in paradise. But there are rules. Lavda ulashomra. Right? Eat from all the trees, but don't eat from that tree. So, of course, what do in chapter 3? Chapter... No, not yet. Well, chapter 3 is where... Yeah, chapter 3 is where we break the rules. Okay? We break the rules in chapter 3. Yeah, we can blame it on the serpent, we can blame it on this, we can blame it on the woman, we can blame it on all kinds of things, but chapter 3 is where everything goes wrong. And now, chapter 4... Again, can we appreciate this? Chapter 4 could have been the beginning. Chapter 4 is the beginning. But what is the beginning? It's the beginning of what happens after the first three chapters. And I'm not saying that to be coy, but I'm saying, but this is the beginning now. Everything else was this Garden of Eden existence, and now we have, okay, now we're going to start with the real world existence. So that's our chapter 4. And the thing which is going to intrigue us today, because I'll share with you my thoughts, and that is, to what extent are we completely devoid of chapters 1, 2, 3, and we're post, and to what extent are we still living in chapters 1, 2, 3? Which means, is this a new start? Is there an echo of the old? Are we still in the old? I mean, where exactly are we? And that's what we'll see among the commentators, completely different approaches to this, and then it's going to give us different understandings of how to read chapter 4. So that's really the whole class, and everything else is details. So, but if you're interested, we'll try to look at some of the details. Yes? Yes. Okay. The Adam Yada, should we stop right there? Yeah, why am I pausing right there? Because where do we mess up? On the Eitz Hadat Tov V'ra. So, when we get to that word, by the way, we didn't get all that far. Second word. The Adam Yada, so now we're saying, okay, is this somehow something which is impacted by the eating of the tree of knowledge of good and evil? Eitz Hadat Tov V'ra, Adam Yada. And of course, those of you who are clever will say that what does it mean, Adam Yada et Chava Ishto? And Adam knew his wife. He'll say he knew her in the biblical sense. Why will you say this? Because this is the Bible.
We are a clever bunch.
Quite impressive. But the other part of this is Adam Yadat Chava Ishto, so now what all of us are thinking, yes, we're all thinking this now, to what extent is this impacted by our previous Eitz Hadat Tov V'ra, and to what extent is this just this innocent, I don't know, what's the term? If you were under 20, you would say hooking up, but if you're older 20, you would not use that phrase. Okay. V'Adam Yadat Et Chava Ishto, V'Tahar V'Teled. So what really interests me right now? The Vatahar Vitalid. What do I want to know about this?
Part of the curse.
The curse of Eve. Was this a painful pregnancy? Did she just now bear the brunt of the pain and of the curse that was given in the last chapter? Is chapter 3 hovering over us right now? Did she just now have the worst pregnancy in the history of the world?
Yes.
Or is this an Eden-like pregnancy where everything is natural and painless and flows? And the word Eden means pleasure. By the way, that's what's really interesting, is that Eden can mean pleasure, Gan Eden. Eden means pleasure, but on the other hand, there are rules to pleasure. But that's exactly the point. There are rules. It doesn't mean anarchy. It doesn't mean that everything goes. It doesn't mean that you can do whatever you want. So, do you now see how in the first part of this verse, how I am like, again, first part, the first two-thirds of this part, I don't know what to do right now. Because Adam Yadat Chava Ishto, Vatahar Vatelet of Kain. But you at least know what bothers me. What bothers me is, did she just go through this worst possible pregnancy, worse than she ever could have imagined? Is she writhing in pain and she gives birth to this child? Is she half dead right now? I'm encouraging pregnancy, right? And is she, what? Right, right. I'm much worse with the teenagers. Then I stress how bad it is and so on. Unless you're married, then it doesn't hurt. So, is this going to be something which is going to be where she has suffered the consequences of the sin, and that will now lead us to the end of the verse, or is this telling us something which happened beforehand and this has nothing to do? This is meaning you can only talk about the punishment of the pregnancy and so on. I'm not saying you only can, but maybe it's sharper if you've already experienced pregnancy in this Garden of Eden kind of sense where there was no pain. So as I said, I don't know what to do with this. And now we get to the last half of the verse, which is, because it's what we're up to, is now the most interesting part, even though the other parts I think were important. Vatelid, vatar vatelid et kayin. That's very interesting. Vatar vatelid et kayin. That is not that. But okay, so let's read the whole thing through. Vadam yadat chava ishto vatahar vatelid et kayin. So what's unusual? So what's unusual in terms of all the other times later on that we're going to have people being named afterwards? Is you have that she had a son, and then he or she or they named the child, but over here is Vadam Yadat Chava Ishto Vatar Vatelet et Kayin. So she gave birth to Kayin. So of course now we're very intrigued. So who named him and why is he Kayin? And what does Kayin mean? Vatomer, who's speaking? Vatomer, and she says, Kaniti Ish et Hashem. Now what in the world does that mean? Kaniti Ish et Hashem. Okay, my translating friends can go ahead. Go. I'm just. What do the words mean? Can you behave?
Yeah, she's attributing it to the child to Hashem.
But what does that mean? Kaniti ish et Hashem. Is that an is she attributing, or is she praying, or is she hoping? Is she meaning? What is going on over here? Which means, what did? Okay, now we'll do it in a little different terms. What did she just now do to this child? I said, we're blaming the mother. What did she just now do to this child by saying, when he comes into this world, Kaniti Ish et Hashem, which means, what kind of responsibilities, what kind of expectations? Meaning, okay, that's really good. That you have Ish over here, Adam, who's he? I mean, what did he have to do with all this? Konesh Maivarts, which I have later on over here, correct? No, it's good. It's good. It could be to acquire. It could be, but maybe that's the best word for it. But the problem is kaniti ish et, the et Hashem is the, right. What I'm saying, the et Hashem is what bothers us over here, and we have an awkward verse. It's a very interesting verse, and that's really what I want you to see over here. And what's hovering over this verse, as far as I'm concerned, there are huge question marks over here. We have the yada, which takes us back to the sin. We have the pregnancy, which may take us back to the punishment. And then we have this, what sounds like an attempt of perhaps healing, perhaps moving forward, but there is this reaching up to God in this, in terms of the very naming of this child. Now, I'm going to ask it again. So now, what is she doing? She gives birth to Kayin. And that's almost, as I said, that's a given. The kid is Kayin. But now, it tells us why she says this. He's Kayin because Kaniti Ish et Hashem. So, okay, by the way, it's very interesting, especially if you want to give a Christological interpretation of what she just now said. Yeah, that's what she just now said. Even though Eve's not Jewish, she thinks her kid's Mashiach. Because we're so much more sophisticated today. The birds do it. The bees do it. Okay, so it's very good that we got your creative juices flowing over here, but you all see over here that there's something just very interesting has taken place, and again, possible reading for right now. She's using her son. She's going to live her life vicariously through her child, because parents never do that. Good. You can call it that. Good, good, excellent. So that's what I'll say again. She's sacrificing her child, which never happened in human history. She's sacrificing her child in order to somehow heal her relationship with God, to placate God. So what you just now had, wow, that becomes really, really interesting. So that's very good. I see, I can go back, good. So I can go back and say, so therefore, the very first commandment that man was given, right, all the way back in the beginning, again, we have a couple rules there, right? La'ovda ula shomra, in terms of the Garden of Eden, but God also said, peru avu, that you should go and have children, and therefore in a certain sense I can say, okay, I am now fulfilling the will of God. By the way, that also becomes very interesting in terms of not listening to God before, now I am listening to God. Okay, you ready for the second pasuk? Vatosef, it sounds like I'm acquiring a man with God, which I'm not. I'm using the word kaniti for acquisition, but I'm acquiring something with God. And of course, I have a problem with the et over here instead of the. It could well be. And now go back to before. She's using the knowledge which was forbidden knowledge. She went through the pain, which was the price that she paid. And now she's saying, Kaniti Ishit Hashem, I now have paid the price through the pain and through the punishment, and now looking back to God, okay, you know, maybe in a sense we should be even, because I just now paid the price over here, and here is this kid. But again, what I'm going to say is that, what did we just now do? We just now read the whole verse in terms of a post-Eden perspective, from the knowledge to the pain to the new acquisition based upon the knowledge and based upon the pain, and that leads us to the appearance of Cain. By the way, do you realize there's another possibility who the Ish is over here? Right. Adam could be the Ish over here. Kaniti Ishet Hashem, right? But we don't, right? We're in a, right. What's interesting is that if you go back to when she actually eats from the tree, so then the at least what the serpent says is that you'll become like Elohim. And I do want to stress the word Elohim is used there. Elohim yodea tov ra. Over here, what's interesting is that the yud kei vav kei is used, which also then will take us back to perhaps differences between the first chapter and the second chapter of Bereishit. At which point do we have yud kei vav kei? At which point do you have Elohim? And that is most certainly worth tracing all the way through. I did, but that could be your homework. But that, correct. But what you're all noticing is that Eve gives some kind of articulation to how she feels, to what her aspirations are, to what kind of hope she has towards the future. There is this aspect in terms of healing something or acquiring something or creating something with, fixing something with God, but I'm going to say it again. But the burden of all this falls upon this new baby now, who now has all of this responsibility because he's the one who's called Cain. And he's the one who now represents either this new or healed, it makes a big difference, by the way, new or healed relationship. Correct. That's what we said a second ago, that the Ish over here could well be right. Now remember all of those Sheva Brachot, Divrei Torah, though there are three partners in man, and that is the father and the mother and God. So now maybe she's giving the first Sheva Brachot. Again, I don't know how long they've been married, but maybe she's giving the first Sheva Brachot Dvar Torah over here by saying, Kaniti Ishet Hashem, and therefore she's describing how what human beings are is the result of father, mother, and God. Okay. Pasuk Bet. That was good. But Tosef Leledet. Now that is very interesting. So again, what we suggested before, we don't know chronology. Is this the continuation of the same pregnancy? Is this 2 minutes later, or is this 9 months later? Did somebody tell her if you're nursing, you can't get pregnant? Which is not... Right. So I'm saying, right. So we don't know the time frame over here. Vatosef Leledet, although what is missing, that's the problem. Vatosef Leledet, what's missing is Vatahar Vateled, right? Or even Vayoda, which means all the fun wasn't there and all that you have is a couple more contractions. Yes? Yes. So Vatosef Leledet, she continues to give birth, Et Achiv Et Havel. She gives birth to his brother, which is also very interesting. And that's the end of the presentation of Havel or Hevel. Now, what's interesting right there is no reason for the name is given. He's not described as the son of Adam. There's no reflection in terms of God over here. However you wanted to read, Vatomer Kaniti Ishet Hashem is all absolutely missing over here. Vatosif Leledet Et Achiv Et Havel. That's it. Half a pasuk is given to Havel in terms of, but no explanation. And then the other thing is, especially having read Kohelet last week, is Hevel Havalim and this whole sense. I mean, Kohelet is when Shlomo. I mean, when Shlomo was young, Chazal tell us then he was in love and Shir Hashirim, and when he gets old, Hevel Havalim. I mean, all the credit card bills from 1,000 women came in. The man was devastated. Yeah, right. So is this predictive in terms of what's going to happen with him? There's a nothingness to this, which means when I look at the two kids, I have this Kaniti Ishet Hashem and Hevel. So, and by the way, I do want to remind you of one thing. Going back to the Eitz Hadaat, what was the real name of the Eitz Hadaat? Not the way that it's marketed. It's marketed as, you know, snake oil. I mean, no. It's marketed as something which is going to save your life and this and make you godly and give you all kinds of things. But what is, not the marketing ploy, what is it actually called? Eitz Hadaat Tovara. So what happens when you have the Eitz Hadaat? What ends up coming out of it? Tov Vira. So now, when I have our Tov Vira coming out, Eitz Hadaat Tov Vira. So now I have the result over here is Tov Vira. To what extent is Tov Vira, again, going back to our binary divisions, to what extent is Tov Vira going to be in terms of Cain and Hevel? And to what extent does she perhaps see the Tov as Cain and the Ra as Hevel? Which means I'm not talking about our perspective right now. I'm trying to understand her perspective by putting all these hopes and aspirations in terms of one child, and the other one is Hevel. Right. Well, I'll say it again. By one child, she talks about God. By the other one, she doesn't say anything. Correct. No, she does. No, but the second part of that pasuk. So again, correct. That when Cain is named, it says she gives birth to Cain. It doesn't say who named her. Then she explains Vatomer Kaniti Ishatem, which indicates that she did give that name. On the other hand, when Hevel is given, there is this lack of explanation in any way, shape, or form. It just says that he was Hevel. So one can say he's Hevel because nothing ever comes of him, so therefore it's Hevel. But as I said, going back and asking this question, to what extent is previous information that we learned, either in Perek Aleph or Bet or Gimel, impact what we're reading right now when we get to this idea of Yada? So Yada goes together with his Tov Vira, so it comes very interesting that I have two children over here. Later on in the Chumash, there will be this binary descriptions between your Yaakov and Esav and so on, where there will be this good and there will be this bad. So I'm raising the question, is that the way that she looks at it? And what would be interesting is that she puts all of her hopes in terms of the first child, in terms of the firstborn, and therefore she sees him as being the Tov by virtue of being the firstborn. Now there's something very interesting about that, if you give me a second to try to explain it. When we then move to the second half of Pasuk Bet, that's as far as we're at, up to so far. Vayihi Hevel ro'etzon, v'kain haya oved adama. Hevel was a shepherd, while Cain worked the land. And by the way, over here, because Hevel was the last one we were talking about, he's the first one that it tells us of his vocation, although it just as easily could have been the other way around, first giving the primary description to Cain, who really is the hero of this chapter, much more than Hevel is. Hevel is much more of a subject, more of an object than a subject. Over here, this division is a very interesting division. You know, we've discussed that many times, the division between the one who is the farmer versus the one who is the shepherd. The main difference between them, and as I said, this follows all the way throughout history, all the way into even the late 1800s in America. Oklahoma. Oh, there we go. Oklahoma. It's the cowboys versus the rancher, right? This is something which goes all the way through, but what's interesting, you know, in America, they promised 150 acres to anybody who can survive for 5 years. This was in the 1880s or so. Anybody who can survive 5 years, they get to keep all of the land. But you have to go and work the land, and it was terrible land, and you had to try to survive. But on the other hand, there were these cowboys who were there with all these herds beforehand, and they used to graze all over the place. And you know, who gave the government is the answer. Who gave you the right to take this land? By the way, it's also very interesting just in terms of capitalism versus who owns the resources on this planet. In order to be a farmer, you need one particular piece of land. You need to declare ownership over that particular piece of land. You need to stay in one place to be a farmer. If you're going to be somebody who is a shepherd, somebody who takes care of animal, you can just go from place to place to place and graze wherever you happen to find land. There's much more of a nomadic existence versus one which is connected to the land. So the interesting thing right here when we read this, so we're told that Hevel is the one who is the Roe Etzon, which we also know later on in history. So our Roe Etzons will include people like, so you want the brothers, and if you want then Moshe, and if you want then David, and so on. So we have this certain affinity and this soft spot in our hearts for those who will become Roe Etzon, and just by reading that, we perhaps may have this perception. I'm not saying that others are bad. By the way, the Gemara actually has a lot of critiques about people who are Roe Etzon because they're considered to be thieves. They're considered to be thieves because their animals go to other people's property. But I think that the issue of property at this point becomes very, very interesting. Who owns the land? So when they were in the Garden of Eden, so who owns the Indians? Who owns the Garden of Eden? Well, God owns the Garden of Eden. And what did God do? God kicked them out. Now who owns the land? So Cain, by virtue of planting over here, so this is what we never hear as we're reading this, what is he doing? He's staking claim in property. He's saying that I own this particular land. On the other hand, what you have Hevel is essentially, he is a socialist. Right, I'm sorry for putting it into those terms, but he's saying, no, everybody owns everything, so therefore we can just sort of graze wherever we want to. There's no such thing as ownership. So I'm sorry for reading all that into right here in this, again, in this half a verse.
But it's worthwhile noting that the punishment which Cain receives is that he has to be somebody who wanders, which means eventually, after killing Hevel, he ends up replacing Hevel and becoming the Hevel type of person who now can't connect to land and instead becomes a wanderer.
But that's what it says. But ye Hevel were its own, so expansiveness, going out, stretching out, using everything. On the other hand, v'kain ha'yoved odama, and kain lifts. Now, the other thing that we do have to keep in mind is that the working of the land is actually also a post-curse situation. In the Garden of Eden, which of course part of the question is what does La'ovda mean? But in the Garden of Eden, we sort of get this sense that things grow, but it's the curse that you're going to have to work the land and eat bread by the sweat of your brow. So now we have Cain apparently embracing the curse. Again, very interesting just in terms of his mother, perhaps before, again, we had that question. Cain embracing the curse and saying, okay, this is reality. I have to now work the ground. And you have Hevel over here, you know, sort of, what are you talking about? You know, we can just go and graze wherever we want to and, you know, be free and play the flute. And again, this is expansive. La'ovda, so the question is what La'ovda means, what it's talking about. So, right, so in Garden Eden he was in charge of giving names to the animals. So yes, well, it's not just father or mother, it's pre-curse when everything belongs to us, because this is the Garden of Eden, and giving names to the animals, versus post-curse, where we have to work the ground over here. So, you can use any terms that you want. You can turn in terms of economics, or you can say that one's a realist and one, but it doesn't make a difference, as I say, because later on in history, both of these could be machloket between the Nachash and between God. Nachash says, yeah, you could take anything you want. And what did God say? You can't. Except for that tree. The fruit of that tree. Okay. Could they use the branches from the Eitz Hadaat Tov Ra'at for schach on their sukkah? Okay. So it depends if they were allowed to, well, she said not to touch it, it depends if you're allowed to use it or not. Is schach gezula, does it puzzle the sukkah? By the way, the answer is yes. The walls don't, but there's a machlokin in this. Let's continue. up to Gimel. Let's forge ahead. And I know earlier you were thinking that only two pages today. We're definitely finishing. So Pasuk Gimel, right? Second half of the second line. Vayihi miketz yamim. Okay, so we're told time went by, but we don't know how much time went by, but we know time goes by. Vayaveh kayin mi pri ha'adama. Kayin does something which is very interesting. He will then bring from his fruit mincha lahashem. He will bring an offering to God. So again, I'm going to point out that he is behaving like his mother in the sense of kiniti ish et Hashem, having the relationship with God. The question then becomes, okay, that sounded really good. So what possibly went wrong over here? And we only can understand what went wrong when we can contrast what he did to what his brother did. Now, his brother did something which apparently infuriates him. And we're not sure what it is at first, because we tend to look at things in a result-oriented perspective. The result is that God will favor this and didn't favor that, so therefore it's the result. But it could be that Hevel did something which infuriated him. Let's take a look. The Hevel hevi gam hu. So here Hevel again is the afterthought, right? The Hevel hevi gam hu. So therefore the religious pioneer is Kayin. The one who is the imitator is Hevel. So we have all the reasons to believe that God should be accepting Kayin. It says, Gam humi b'charot sano umichevlehim. He brings from the choices, from the firstborn, from the choices part of his flock, v'yisha Hashem et Hevel v'in minchato. And God showed favor upon not just the offering, upon Hevel. God chooses Hevel. V'yishah Hashem et Hevel v'et minchato, v'et Kayin v'el et el minchato lo sha'a. But when it came to Kayin and his offering, again, it's not just the offering. God chooses Hevel and his offering. God does not choose Kayin and his offering. But of course you notice the difference in the description in Pasuk Dalet versus Pasuk Gimel. You noticed what Hevel did. Hevel brought, well, first of all, he brings animals as opposed to produce. Obviously, because he's a Roed Son. But that's not just what he did. He did something else. He did something else. So you're all going to say, I know you're going to tell me, he brings the choices, he brings the best, but also what did he do? He brought the firstborn. He sacrificed the firstborn. He sacrificed the firstborn. And, it's interesting because some of you actually got that. So it's interesting that some of you actually were willing to say that back in the birth itself of Kayin, is that in a sense Eve had sacrificed him in order of using him to fulfill her dreams, using him in order to rekindle, recreate the relationship with God. But now you have something really interesting over here, is that Hevel's sense is that the firstborn is the one who should be dedicated to God. By the way, just realize how interesting it is what he's saying. So if anyone's going to tell me why later on in the Chumash we find that the firstborn should be the Kohen, who's the first one who says this? Hevel's the first one who says it. But I know, but he's saying it in terms of the object, not in terms of the person who's bringing it, but he's saying, no, firstborn things should be dedicated to God. And what? Firstborn things should be dedicated to God. So therefore, it's not just, again, read the pasuk. It's vehevel hevi gamhu mi b'chorot sono. It didn't have to say that. Umichevlehim. Which means he brought things which were very choice and so on, but mi b'chorot, which means when I flip back towards Hevel, what did Hevel not do? Kayin did not bring bikurim, which means I can go back now and say, hold it. Maybe I should have been reading this whole story as the exodus from Gan Eden, exodus from Egypt, leading up to Chag HaShavuot, which by the way is basically accepting law. And what happens when you get there? Then you have Chag HaBikurim, and you bring the first fruits to the temple. And what does he do? He has this religious sensitivity, by the way, which may be built on guilt, which he inherited from his mother. He has a sensitivity that I need to somehow work things out with God. Yes? He has this sensibility, I need to work things out with God. Why? Because that's who he is. That's what his essence is, because he's Kayin. And on the other hand, he doesn't have the sense that I therefore need to have God as the primary thing in my life. Rather, it's sort of I need to work out a deal with God. Yes, we need to get to an understanding with God rather than giving the choices. And on the other hand, the one who understands that the choices needs to go to God, which I'm going to say again, it's very easy to blame Kayin for everything that goes wrong over here, but it's just very interesting what Hevel did, which may have driven him completely crazy. Not just that God chose that, and not just that God says, yes, the firstborn, right? That's exactly it, which means the implication over here is that Kayin should be totally dedicated towards his relationship with God over here and there, and instead he's not totally dedicated. He's giving God something along the way, but as I said, what jumps out at us over here is the distinction. Yes, Kayin is the spiritual pioneer who needs to work things out with God, which he may have gotten from his mother. On the other hand, Hevel has this different religious sense, and this religious sense is, going back to the very beginning, going back to the first, giving the primary thing towards God. And as I said, that becomes very interesting in terms of how Kayin may have understood this. Pasuk Gamhu sounds to me as well. It sounds like a response, but I accept the point. Pasuk Hey, the El Kayin, right, we got that. El Kayin ben lo sha'a. Vayichar leKayin ma'od, vayiplu panav. So we have two emotions over here. What are the two emotions? Anger and depression. How do those correlate? Well. Okay, so it's interesting calling adolescents. I don't know how old they are. Vayimiketzayamim. But let's read on. We have over here is two emotions which we think are correlated to one another. One is anger. Other is depression. Now, who is he angry at? That doesn't say. Who is he angry at? So, is he angry at himself? Is he depressed because of, is it himself? But what is his conclusion? First, God engages him in conversation. And this is very interesting. Vayomar Hashem El Kayin, Lama Charalach, why are you upset? V'lamana flupanecha, and why are you depressed? So here, God moving into therapist mode, puts him down on the couch and say, let's talk about it. I've diagnosed you that you are both angry and depressed. Why? Halo im teitiv se'et im lo teitiv lefeta chatat rovetz. What does that mean? That if you improve yourself, im teitiv, if you improve yourself, se'et, you will become elevated and you will become acceptable and you will be, meaning, this is up to you, your performance. This is not about anything else. It's not about your mother, right? It's not about me. It's not about your brother. This is about you. If you improve yourself, by the way, now we have a very strong implication what went on till now. Look, Masha wasa adakshav lo haya tov, by the way, im teitiv, tov vira, im teitiv, if you would make this tov. All of chapter 1 was about tov. If you, im teitiv, if you are able to make this tov, se'et, you will then be elevated. V'im lo teitiv, but if you don't, lefeta chatat rovetz, you will then find, by the way, this is also interesting, what's the correlation then between depression and sin? Is sin somehow a self-medication for somebody who's depressed? Probably. Okay, why not? It sounded good. Or the other way, if somebody is depressed, they think that this is what's going to, right, that this is what's going to make them feel, as I said, this is very interesting, that we have teitiv, we have the tov. We didn't realize that yet, right? We have the tov staring at us over here. The elecha teshukato. What does that mean? The elecha teshukato. So over here, the word teshukato is a very strong word. What does it mean? It means passion. But we had passion in the last, we had desire. We had desire or passion in the last chapter. Do you remember where?
In the curse.
Before that?
No, in the...
Before that? Right. Teshukato is there, correct. We had ta'ava right right? If you look at source 3, ki yodea elokim, by the way, isn't that interesting? You have the word yodea, dat, knowledge. Ki yodea elokim biyamachachem imenu nevchu einechem. The serpent says, because God knows that when you eat it, your eyes will be open. Yitim ke elohim yodea tov vira. You will be like gods who will know good and evil. Right, but what did the serpent say? You'll be like gods knowing good and evil. But teira ha'isha ki tov ha'etz. What did she not see? She did not see the ra. She only sees the tov. L'ma'achal v'chi ta'avahu le'inayim. And there's some kind of a passion over there. V'nechmada eats latzkil, and it's good to understand, and therefore she eats it. But why does she eat it? Because she only sees the tov. What doesn't she see? She doesn't see the ra. So now, as I said, all that being our echo in the background, when we read this verse and God giving his little therapy session to Cain, he says, you can improve and you can control the desire, vatatim shalbo, and you can rule over the desire. Which means desire is not something which is impossible for you to control, which, by the way, basically we live in a world of tov vira. We live in a world of tov vira, and you have not chosen enough tov. And by the way, by definition, if you don't choose enough tov, what do you then have? You have ra, but by comparison. And that becomes interesting, because his offering is only ra by comparison because of heaven, which means his way of looking at the world is, why did I come in second place? Because somebody else came in first place. So there's one of two possibilities. What are the two possibilities? What does God say that one possibility is? Tev, become tov, improve. And what does he conclude? And his conclusion is the opposite. Get rid of the competition. By the way, going straight back, hostile takeover, capitalism. Right? Cain is our first capitalist. Why produce a better product? Let's just get rid of the other side of the competition. And therefore, we have our first. And now is the only one. And then we have complete market share. Going on to the next pasuk. Pasuk Chet. How does Cain take the therapy session that he just now received? First one was on the house. We didn't even have any kind of no fee, which is why he didn't take it seriously, because he didn't have to pay anything. Pasuk Chet. Vayomer Cain el Hevel Achiv. And over here, once again, with Hevel, there's no discussion, there's no words, there's nothing is. We're not told what's said. V'yihi b'yotam b'sadeh. By the way, it's interesting. The field. Why is the field interesting? So the field is arguing the place that Cain thinks that he owns, and it's that Hevel thinks that he can graze on. Meaning, the field may be much more of a place of contention between the two than we ever appreciate. V'yakam Cain el Hevel achiv v'yahargehu. And he goes and he stands up against Hevel and he kills. And by the way, as I said, it's interesting the word hariga is used, not the word ritzicha is used. He gets him and killed him. To what extent this is intentional or not, we're not sure. Moving to the next pasuk tet, Vayomer Hashem el Cain, a Hevel achicha. So now God says, where is your brother? Where is your competition? Of course, with God's perspective, it's brother, right? And what does he say? Vayomer lo yadati. And it goes back to the word of knowledge. Lo yadati. I don't know. Again, dat tov v'ranzo dat. Lo yadati. Now, this is as far as we're going to get today for the simple reason that we have ran out of time. Source number 2, which we didn't read, is exactly what somebody suggested along the way. Pru Revu was the first mitzvah, so perhaps to an extent I can say that they did try to improve the relationship. In moving down to Rashi in source number 5, Rashi reads the whole pregnancy as before the sin. V'adam yada kvar kodem anin shomala kodem shachata v'nitrad min gan eden v'chena herayon v'haleida. Rashi's reading of the whole thing is not the way we read it. That everything is before that happens, and it's based upon Rashi's read, most likely in source number 6. Where Rashi implies, in source 6 and 7, where Rashi implies that all that happened before. On the other hand, if you look at source number 9, he's the one who reads it the other way. V'nachon li'sh'amra ha'ben azeh yeli kinyan la'Hashem, ki kasher namut, once we die, bimkomenu la'vodet baro, he will take our place. None of us read it that that strongly. That once there was the curse, what was the main part of the curse? You're going to die. That's what God said. The other punishments probably are all kinds of tikkunim that we need. What did God say will happen when you eat from the tree? You're going to die. So what happens when you're going to die? The world, that's it, is desolate. So what does she say? Kaniti ishet Hashem. I have now taken care of the most basic need, and that is to replace ourselves, population, because we're not going to be here anymore because we sinned. So I'm saying, what a way, Ramban, sorry, source number 10, that's the Ramban. On the other hand, the Bechor Shur reads it as the opposite of Rashi, post-pain, the way that really we read it before, Kaniti Ishet Hashem, Kaniti Oto Begufi Uvetzauri Uvetzvoni Etekadosh, which means, I have had to now suffer through this curse of all the pain and the childbirth and so on, and now I've produced this child as per the curse. So again, all that I'm showing you is that there are two ways of reading this. Essentially, the two ways are, to what extent is this going before, to what extent is this going afterwards? If you'll have time, you will go through the Radak and so on and so forth, but that all is your homework.